Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Can I kick it? Kick it.
Greetings and salutations from the Old National Bank Studio on State Street. It's Mark Zander and Brian Hanley on ESPN 1000. Do you remember what movie that's from?
No, I don't, but I laughed because John Grachowski, who was a copy editor, and he still does baseball pieces for the Chicago Sun-Times, every day he walked in the office, he would say, greetings and salutations.
That is from the movie. Christian Slater said that line in the movie Airheads. I believe that was the movie, but I know it was Christian Slater.
Well, this was well before Christian Slater, I think, was even born, so I don't...
Well, Airheads is probably a 30-year-old movie by now.
Well, let's see. This would be like 1985. I do the math.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I just laughed because, I mean, every single day you walked in, that's the first words I was
watching. I made you laugh right out of the box.
Well, you need to because I watched the White Sox.
I know. And by the way, I am officially a hold-in this morning.
You're a hold-in.
Yeah, I'm not a hold-out. I'm a hold-in. I'm here, and I'm just not really ready because the coffee hasn't kicked in. So I'm a hold-in officially, okay? That's probably going to change as this show goes on, but that's my official.
Yeah. You need to mainline that?
I must. I don't have a needle around.
Did you go to Metallica on Thursday?
I did not. I'm not going to see Metallica. I know it was great. It was great. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah, you know what? I don't know. The idea of fighting the crowds and all that stuff.
Yeah, I
saw him, and I'll see him again some point, and I'm sure it was a great show. I know that I could have watched it from home because I had a friend on Twitter say it was on Hulu.
There was a channel that
I don't know if there were some specific parts of Lala that was on Hulu or whatever, but you know what? Been there, done that. I really don't want to be that guy, but I'm that guy right now.
Yeah, it would take a lot of effort to fight the crowds and
not only that, I'm nowhere near the city now. You know, coming into work is great, but on an off day, coming into the city and fighting all the traffic and fighting the crowds and everything. Been there, done that. You know, just not feeling it. And maybe that might have been, although that was the off day for the Sox, and yesterday was an off day too.
And the day before Thursday was an off day. So we went through the stretch of, 15 games in 14 days and how important could be season-changing because you're playing division opponents. And then we get the one earlier in the week. Well, it's the next 19 games are against crap teams. They didn't say that. I did.
People say this is the easy part of the schedule.
Right.
Nothing is easy for the White Sox. No. Stop saying that. Nothing is easy for the White Sox. If we had six games against the Reds or the Pirates right now, that doesn't mean anything.
Nope.
Nothing is easy for the White Sox. So stop with the easy schedule stuff.
And at least they said it during the week. I think AJ said it, you know, his approach is don't take anything for granted. And you're not even a 500 team. You can't take anything for granted.
Nothing.
You're just a team. You're not a great team.
You're a mediocre team right now. Mediocre.
And against the Rockies, you know, here come the base running errors. Well, you know, where are you going, Lurie? I mean, just you can't make that.
Oh, don't get me started. That set me literally almost literally on fire when that happened.
I mean, you can't make the third out of an inning at third base when you had nowhere to go. And then, you know, Jose Abreu at second. How many times have we seen it?
How many guys have
we seen it from?
Right. Now, look, the Jose thing, I'm going to give him a bit of grace. That was a hard line drive, and that happens. The Leury thing, that's just dumbass base running. There's nothing other to say about that than dumbass base running. And then we have Tim Anderson last night to thank. Our leader changed Mr. Changed the Game. He pulled a selfish move. First of all, you know, if you're a baseball professional, I'm not a baseball professional. And I know not to argue with the ump because chances are you're going to get kicked out.
Well, don't get in his grill and he got kicked out, and that's
even worse. And he's a repeat offender, which means he will be suspended for at least a game, if not more. But here's the thing. Mr. Leader of our team, which I don't believe he's our leader at all. I bought into everything last year, but when times go bad, where's our leader? Secondly, he pulled a selfish move. We're supposed to be a better team with him in the lineup, which hasn't really always panned out, but then he takes himself out of the game and probably another game or two with a suspension because of what he did. That's not a leader. So anybody who says that Tim Anderson is our leader on the South Side, that's not the case. Jose is. I just wish he was more vocal. We could use an acquisition of a real leader for that clubhouse because Tony's not one either.
Yeah, well, and I'm glad you brought Tony up because it's not, fire Tony chant time. But
I have it right here. I will fire it off at any moment.
Well, back to the base running. Tony, can you go back to the old fiery Tony? Because he said of those errors, all we have to do is coach him up. Okay, well, we're about to turn the calendar over.
When?
Sooner than later would be, like May would have been good. And then he said, but we don't want to coach the aggressiveness out of him. That isn't aggressive. That's stupid.
They're two different things, no doubt.
Don't tell me aggressive because, he's always there to explain away, and he always falls back on that aggressive crutch. And I'm tired of it. It's time that he says, we can't have any more of that. That ends today. That's the last time. I can't abide it. We're not in the position with the luxury. We don't have that, okay? Stop.
He doesn't have fire in his belly. He doesn't have emotion. There's actually a sound panel here, which Jake puts together for us for every show.
Yeah.
And there's one that says, Contreras emotional postgame, which we will end up hearing. I would like to see one someday that says, La Russa emotional postgame.
Perfect, right?
That would be great. And I asked Jake, do we have an emotional La Russa cut?
I got him coughing and umming.
Not emotion. That's about as close to emotion as we'll get from Tony at this point, probably.
That's because the team's choking. I thankfully Courtney Cronin's going to talk Bears with us early in the show.
Change our course of thinking for just a little bit.
The offensive line was a jigsaw puzzle coming into camp, and now 3 days later.
Hey, at least we still have some kind of hope. How much hope do we have on the South Side now?
Well, yeah, because it's only training camp, and the pads come on Monday, so we haven't gotten that. But, the White, can you believe they haven't been two games over? If I told you the last time they were two games over, what was the record?
It was like maybe 17-15. No, not even April. Yeah,
six and four.
Yeah, not even
six
April. That's too
four.
Much. Yeah, six and
it was
four.
April.
That's
six
right.
And four.
That, they went on that run.
Their
best run of the year.
Six so and far. Four. Yeah. You haven't been two games over break even since that six. And I mean, what are we doing here?
But Brian, you're right. The idea that Tony, and that's a great way to frame it. He explains things away. He's done that all year. And that is exactly not the Tony that I remember from when I was in high school, when he was managing the team the first time.
Yeah. And it's great that Lurie said, oh, I can't do that. OK, well, stop telling me you can't do it. Just don't do it.
It'd be great that Larry wasn't played so much.
Well, and that's
at this
not
point.
On him.
I know it's not. I know it's not. And at this point, I would like to see Colas brought up before I want to see Larry play too much.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're Tuesday at 5:00 Chicago Central Time. The trade deadline. The trade close. The deadline comes to an end, and that's it. The Seattle Mariners, did you see what they did last night?
Yes, Castillo. That is a hell of a pickup. And that team, immediately now, for me, that team is a real danger coming out of the AL.
They're holding the second wild card spot, and they just mortgaged their future because they wanted this year to be the year. And they gave five prospects, including the top three in their system.
It's a bold, bold move. And that's what you do when you really want it.
Right. The White Sox don't have just one thing that they have to do. It's not like, boy, if we just need it, we need one more starter and we're set to go for October.
Right.
We just need one more bat and we're ready to go.
We wish that we were that close. We should be on paper. We are that close. but because of the lack of discipline. And I will go ahead and say it. I've just about had enough. The lack of leadership and the lack of discipline. We are not maximizing the talent we have. So no one piece that Rick Hahn will be able to acquire will fix this problem.
So one of our Twitter polls today is, what do the White Sox need most? A lefty power bat, which we've been talking about for the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Bullpen help.
Jesse's been talking about it for 2 years.
Absolutely. And yep. I'll get to David Robertson. I've been trying to sell you him for a month or so. And
if he's cheap, I'll take him.
Well, he's certainly financially cheap. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, to get him from the Cubs if he's
yeah.
cheap.
Well, I mean, he's 37. And
right, right. He can't cost much. Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, he's a rental player. But mm-hmm. we'll get to some of the names that are now being associated with the White Sox. But in the final, so it's a lefty power bat. It's bullpen help. It's a new manager. I couldn't help myself. I had to throw the new manager.
Right. At this point, you got to throw everything against the wall.
Yeah. I know it's not happening, but the meathead in me just, you had to do it.
He could wake up after the trade deadline and say, you know what? Maybe I'm not the guy.
Well, I'd like
chances
to see that.
Are that's not going to happen, but yeah. maybe you never know.
Yeah. Can you go get Aaron Judge in the offseason? Yeah. How about 41 home runs for one guy?
And a home run saving catch.
Yeah. How about that? Two home runs yesterday.
He didn't have to jump much. He's like 6'8".
Oh, good Lord. Someone tweeted out, and I retweeted it. This was before the two home runs yesterday. Aaron Judge had 39 home runs, and I think it was five White Sox total.
I saw that.
And again, there does seem to be a correlation for the White Sox that when they hit a home run or two, they win the game, and they don't do that nearly often enough. But Aaron Judge now joins Babe Ruth to have 41 home runs before August.
Amazing. And this is
a really elite club.
And this is not the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire days.
No.
We're up against the break. We've got Courtney Cronin, Bears reporter for ESPN. We are going to have her join us after the break to talk about camp, what she's seen, and what we can look forward to as they'll kind of ramp things up this coming week. It's Hanley and Zander on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000 on a Saturday morning. We've got Courtney Cronin, Bears reporter for ESPN 1000, joining us. Courtney, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. I told Brian that I was a hold-in today. Not quite ready for work, but I'm here. Is that Roquan's standstill?
You know, it's interesting because they took a player off the PUP yesterday, the PUP list that he got put on Wednesday, and it wasn't who we thought it was going to be. It's Sam Kamara, who's a defensive lineman. So they've only got one remaining on the PUP list, and that is Roquan Smith. It's just a strange situation because the contract holdout was the elephant in the room that Ryan Poles wisely addressed without going into the details of where things stood with the contract negotiations, even not answering whether Roquan was still representing himself. Because last we checked, that was still the case. But, you know, he was kind of just talking about it in terms of, like, how challenging that can make negotiations and all of that, but really didn't go too into depth on that. So then the next day, they put him on the PUP list. And I think it's a way that, you know, will kind of stymie some of the questions that, you know, are asked because he's on PUP, right? Like, he's got an injury, right? Like, so we can't, you know, until he comes off of that, you know, there's no real need for the team to address it publicly. But I would imagine that if he does get a contract extension in the next couple of weeks, that he'll be off of that relatively quickly. As far as like where things stand with that, like had he not been on PUP, we were all fully expecting that he would be holding in at practice, which means, you know, the team was still able to find him. And you wonder, like, was the PUP list, and then just miraculously he had an injury along with that too. Like, is that a way of them kind of doing him a solid and not fining him, but trying to work this thing out and not alienate your best defensive player? There's a whole lot that goes into it. It's certainly different than the other hold-ins we've seen in the league, but no, maybe it's a good sign for Roquan Smith, albeit it's a different position, but DK Metcalf was holding in at Seahawks practice, and that one got solved relatively quickly. So, the Bears can hope that they can get something done with Smith in the shorter term rather than the longer term, so they'd be able to have him out there for practice.
Courtney, can you make the case that given where the Bears are at as a team and beginning a rebuild, that Roquan Smith, who is their best player, I'm not only on defense, arguably the best player on the roster, that it would behoove Ryan Poles to move him and get as much as he can because you have a lot of needs here moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that when they let go of their other veterans on defense who were building blocks before, the guys that they built around, Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, the list goes on, and they keep someone like Roquan Smith. He's 25 years old. He's had an incredible career so far since he got here as the 8th overall pick in 2018. I don't feel like you part ways with someone you want to build your defense around, somebody who is very much, as you mentioned, the best player on this team. I think it's too soon to do that. Even if you are in a long-term rebuild, you still need to have good players to build around. So to me, that would be short-sighted if they wanted to move on from him because they are at the very beginning stages of this. He's someone you build around, not somebody that you move.
I agree. I would hate to see them lose Roquan Smith. But like Brian said, there are so many needs, and we actually heard you. I can't remember if you were which show you were talking to just yesterday or the day before. But I heard you say something that I wanted to bring up, that Luke Getsy said his plan for the offense is not something that is going to make okay players great. It is going to basically use them to the best of their abilities. It is not going to make them something that they're not. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, so like I think the common notion is when, you know, you go out with the old and with the new, brand new offense, an offense that, you know, Luke Getsy brought from Green Bay, which was different from what they were running last year in Fields' rookie year. Like, I think the notion is, oh my goodness, this is going to like just make this guy skyrocket, and it's going to, you know, make Justin Fields into Joe Montana. Like, that's always the sort of notion that we run into when there is a new system installed, and this is a quarterback-driven scheme. Luke Getsy said that the day he was hired. So as it pertains to Fields, I think it's just like realizing within the confines of this offense, it's going to bring out the most in him. So what does that mean? It means he's not dropping back 45 times a game and allowing the pass rush to tee off on him because it's obvious that he's not going to, they're not running the ball. So they're going to go try to kill the quarterback because there's a tell there. Like, that is literally what that is. And so for Getsy installing this offense and for Justin Fields, it's going to rely heavily on the run scheme. I mean, we've seen variations of this, like Kubiak-Shanahan system. Like, Matt LaFleur came from that tree, and obviously Luke Getsy's in that too. So what does that mean for a quarterback? It means a lot of play actions. It means changing your launch points. It means not dropping back to the exact same place that you're always doing it. And making your life harder. The outside zone scheme, what that means for a rushing attack, that takes pressure off of a quarterback. Like, quarterback doesn't need, honestly, unless you're Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, and even at this point of both of their careers, they need some help elsewhere on offense. And so, look, I think that in tempering some of the expectations, because I just feel like a lot of fans sometimes hear, oh, brand new offense. Aaron Rodgers was in this offense. Aaron Rodgers was a two-time MVP. Justin Fields is on that trajectory.
Right.
Like, there's so few scheme-transcendent quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, so few. I count three of them. I count Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady. That's it. And so you can't expect that Justin Fields is going to be something that he's not. Just on top of the fact that, like, we don't truly know what he is as an NFL quarterback yet, he's also in year two, so he's learning. It's not like you expect him to be a polished product of somebody who's 37 years old and just played in this offense last year. So, you know, what Getsy was saying, because I think somebody had mentioned, it was a question phrased along the lines of, you know, how much different is it going to be? How much different are players going to look in it? And it's, you know, you don't, the scheme's not meant to make anybody more than who they are and what they are. It's just meant to put them in the best position and within the confines of the offense, like, bring out their best potential and put them in situations to reach their potential.
And speaking of putting someone in the best situation to reach their potential, Ryan Pace didn't do that with Tevin Jenkins. he was the only GM reportedly that envisioned him as a starting left tackle in this league when he was playing right tackle in college. And now he might not even be the backup right tackle. And I don't know if they're going to try him at right guard at some point. I tweeted out in the spring when he lost the first string reps that he's halfway down the road to Busville, and people immediately said, you're out of your minds, too early to tell. Well, I'd say he's about three quarters of the road to Busville, at least with the Bears. He seems like a nice guy and all, but it seems like this administration is making a quick decision on Tevin Jenkins.
Yeah, and I know that Matt Eberflus said yesterday the reason he's not out there is because he's quote-unquote dealing with something with the trainers. So unless it's like a serious injury, as we found out with Lucas Patrick yesterday, Matt Eberflus isn't going to talk about it. So whether it's like a soft tissue thing that usually like takes, you know, it's a day-to-day sort of diagnosis, they won't actually say what's going on with him and how long he'll be out. But it sounds like it's something that's not as serious, what he's been dealing with, because we saw him out there the first day of practice. I can understand the concern of Bears fans. This guy did have off-season back surgery last year. So you got to wonder, from the health perspective, like where is Tevin Jenkins? But on the on-field perspective, you know, seeing him as the extra lineman, you know, when they were practicing the other day, just like very initial stages of training camp on day one, where that would be like the extra lineman on a goal line situation. If they have like their jumbo formation, that's a swing tackle. And that's not where the Bears, at least the last regime, felt Tevin Jenkins would be. Now, we know he slipped in the draft. There were some health concerns there. And the Bears this offseason made it very clear that, especially Ryan Poles, that they wanted like a different conditioning, a different fit for their offensive linemen. Jenkins told us in the spring he had lost weight. He had prioritized doing Pilates. He had done a lot of things to try to get his body where it needs to be. But when you do see a fifth-round rookie in Braxton Jones, like pretty soon after he got here, supplant Tevin Jenkins at left tackle, who had been taking the left tackle reps during the voluntary minicamp in April, and then, you know, early part of OTAs, I think it does raise a couple eyebrows. It's tough to, like, for a franchise to give up on a second-round pick that quickly, but I think it's pretty clear, at least in the early stages, and if he does something that surprises us, then that would be great for him. But I think it's pretty clear what this current organization feels about a pick that was not theirs from a year ago.
Right, a second-round pick from Ryan Pace is, you know, probably the designation that they're assigning it, because, look, they are making wholesale changes. Obviously, things did not work last year. A whole new regime, as you said. So anything is possible. Now, I want to get back to Justin Fields for a minute. Something caught my eye in the Athletic this past week. They graded quarterbacks in pods.
Tears.
Like tiers. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And Justin Fields, fairly or unfairly at this point, I think it's probably unfairly because, as you said, we really don't know who he is somewhere in the fourth tier. And I'm not sure, I can't remember who contributed to this and what they were basing it on. Is that a surprise, and will Justin surprise people who are not giving him a lot of credit in that way?
I don't think it's too much of a surprise, considering how his rookie season went. And, I mean, a lot of that's not entirely on the quarterback. He had a lot of growing pains last year that,
absolutely,
you know, were a struggle for someone who had a really bad offensive line and got sacked at a higher rate on every drop back than any other quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, the organization didn't exactly set him up for failure. What we were talking about the run game earlier, you know, they would run the ball with David Montgomery and then they'd abandon it.
Yep.
That doesn't help your quarterback. The whole situation with Allen Robinson couldn't have been handled worse. So you already took away this guy's number one receiver before he even had a chance to build something with him in last year. Like, obviously, the organization parted ways with Robinson this year, and that was completely fair, and I hope he goes and succeeds somewhere else. But we all know what happened there, and he just wasn't involved in the offense, which is weird. So I can understand. It's almost like giving him an I for incomplete, because I don't know where else you'd stash him. He's a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yep.
And the floor was last season for him. Like, truly, if it's any worse than last season, then you know that you messed up at the position and you've got to start over, which it feels like this organization doesn't. I mean, certainly they've been trying to avoid that because they've been in a perennial state of rebuilding at the quarterback position and trying to find somebody that's going to stick. So I can understand why he would be there, but there's still like so much unknown about him, and I don't know if you're going to know where to put him, or at least like where to fairly put him after this season, considering kind of what he lacks around him.
Right, and that's why I think that it is going to be a pleasant surprise for many who think he belongs there, because us watching it very, very closely, you can't grade him on last season. Brian and I have talked about that many times. You just can't.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, there's certain things, like his fatal flaw coming out of college was that he held on to the ball too long. And you saw that show up last year. Now, would anybody hold on to the ball when your offensive line looks the way that it did and you're freaking out? You don't know where, like, the rush is coming from and, you know, your receivers aren't, you're struggling. Like, yeah, I understand that. But there's got to be ways for him this year. Like, the Bears aren't going to have their answer after year two if he's the franchise quarterback that this team has been missing. I really, truly think that that's going to come after year three because they do have a lot to spend. And I would anticipate, even though Ryan Poles is somebody who has been adamant he wants to have homegrown players and build through the draft, that's wonderful. Next year they will have a first-round pick, but you've got to spend. You've got to be active players in free agency. Not saying you have to be the Rams and only go that route, but you do need to find upgrades on the roster and do it more than just guys who are here on one-year deals to help you get through this season. And that's going to help your quarterback in the end.
We'll let you go, Courtney, but you mentioned Luke Getsy and you know, Mark's question about the system itself. He was brutally honest. He said, you know, he's encouraged. Everyone's encouraged the first week of camp with their guys. But he said, we have a long way to go. And that was an answer that Cole Kmet gave and Justin Fields gave. What about this system do you like? Is it a simple system, a system that, you know, people can pick up and adapt to? Or what is it that you like about what you've seen so far?
Well, I watched a variation of this up close in Minnesota, where you have an above-average quarterback to good quarterback. He teeters between both classifications, and Kirk Cousins, who, again, not a scheme-transcendent quarterback, but somebody, when you put him in the confines of what he can do and do well, you're going to get success out of that. And I certainly think that Fields has a much higher ceiling than someone like that. And seeing, you know, that system and what it can do for even a quarterback who at times borders mediocrity, it gives you, I think, the belief that Fields can be what he was drafted to be when they went and, like, you know, got the farm for him. And it was a wise decision because they I mean, even the last regime's not here, they had to do that. They were trying everything. So you'd like to think that this offense, the burden of this, of, you know, carrying a team is not going to solely fall on Justin Fields in this scheme. And, you know, that you have someone like David Montgomery there and you have a really heavy tight end group that I would anticipate will be used quite a bit just to take the load off the quarterback. Like, I think that that's the thing that should give Bears fans some excitement, because well, I know that, like, kind of the outside expectations for this team are that they are, you know, a year away, if not more. At least you're not going to put your quarterback in a situation where he has to shoulder every little thing, every single game.
Courtney Cronin, Bears insider for ESPN 1000. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
It's Hanley and Zander on ESPN 1000. We'll talk Bears if you want to jump in. 312-332-3776. We'll also talk baseball, north side, south side. We have a lot of audio to play for you, and we've got all of that and more. We're here until 11 here on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's zero. That's what's so special about him. Forget all the athletic part. The guy, the way he attacks every single day and his approach and lead by example and, you know, doesn't ask anybody to do anything he doesn't expect of himself. I mean, that guy's he's a natural born leader type of guy. So we're lucky to have a guy like that leading this thing.
And that is Luke Getsy talking about his quarterback, Justin Fields, which Brian, right out of the box, I always felt that he was a confident kid, had that ability to kind of lead. You know, something we really haven't seen. Some would argue Trubisky kind of sort of had that. Mm. Certainly never seemed like Jay Cutler did, but, you know, that's going back
a little too far. Mitch wasn't the most charismatic in a job.
No. Absolutely. And I would agree. Justin Fields seems much more in that respect.
The job demands it, right? Yep. You need to be that outgoing guy. Mm-hmm. You need to command a huddle.
Right.
And, you know, Mitch, you can argue whether it was Matt Nagy who did him no favors throughout their tenure here together. By a headline today that Mitch Trubisky struggles at Pittsburgh training camp for the first few days. So, you know, my rule of thumb is never go to a basketball school to take a second overall pick as a quarterback. That's just me.
That's a crazy thought, Brian, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But all the intangibles seem to be there with Justin Field, and that's right. Terrific. You know, the maturity, first one in, last one out of the building. Work ethic, you know, communication skills, confidence, all that. But to your question to Courtney about putting him in the fourth tier quarterbacks, we just don't know, like you said, because there are things you liked from what you saw of him last year. You didn't like him putting the ball on the ground. There are things he certainly needs to be better at, and we still don't know if he's the franchise.
It wasn't a real test last year. No, it was not a real test. Something else Courtney said, too, that I kind of appreciate, because it could be a under-promise, over-deliver scenario, which would be nice, that this regime seems to be saying, everybody, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, Cole Kmet said, we've got a lot of work to do. Luke Getsy said that. So there's no painting this rosy picture. There's no word salad. There's none of that. It's pretty direct, like, hey, everybody, temper your expectations, which has the ability to, if things turn out better, I would love to be, you know, undersold and over-delivered. Wouldn't you, as a fan?
I will say with confidence right now, and it might be stupid because of the state of the offensive line, and we don't know, you know, what you have here in Justin Fields. But from what I've seen of this coaching staff and some of the people on this team so far, they likely will not have a winning record in a 17-game season. I don't foresee a 6-game losing streak, which we saw too many times under the former regime, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the things coming off the rails. You might lose 2 or 3 in a row. The schedule is certainly going to help you because it's not the most difficult in the league. But you will not have the thing completely go awry. And I would also suggest you probably won't go entire halves of football without scoring on a routine basis, like the first half.
Hey, don't get us so excited, Brian.
Well, I mean, but to me, that's a low bar. Right?
I know, but it's a bar that we would love to see.
Right. Now, I could be completely wrong, but I really...
Let's go with it. I think we can go with it.
You have to work at losing 6 consecutive games in the National Football League, and Matt Nagy did that multiple times.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's just amazing, and hopefully, after this season... That will be a distant and yet quite unfortunate memory. The old regime.
So Mark Potash in the Sun-Times, talking about Luke Getsy, has a column and says, Luke Getsy, the most important man at Hallis Hall, more so than the head coach, more so than the quarterback, more so than...
I can see that point.
No, I mean, you can make that argument, right? Because he's got the shiny new... quarterback here.
He's got the keys, the shiny keys.
And he's got to get in short order, has to see what that ceiling is and how quickly he can get there. And hopefully, I mean, you can make that argument that it, because, you know, Nagy was a play caller till he fired himself. And he took the play calling back because his ego couldn't stop him. And then he fired himself a second time. You know, Luke Getsy isn't getting fired. This is his deal.
No,
right?
So this is going to be totally different. It's going to be a lot more quiet, and maybe we'll see a lot more on the field that will be pleasing. Just out of the box, I would say that. Bear fan Bob, he's jumping in from Twin Lakes. Our buddy, hey, Bear fan Bob, you're on with Hanley and Xander, bud.
Boys, good morning.
Good morning.
Are you on the boat? Bob, you fishing?
No, that's tomorrow. I'm going to fish the big lake tomorrow.
Okay.
We're going to go for the big ones.
All right.
So long story short, I've been listening a little bit. And at the end of the day, I don't need to see Bobby Douglas Pardue out there, or for our young Bear fans, you know, run, Forrest, run. I've seen enough of that with Mitchell Trubisky. and the other quarterbacks, because the rest of the team looks like a bunch of Keystone Cops out there because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know where to be. And, you know, they've not been coached properly. I'd like to see, for a change, some timed plays. You know, nobody knows timing more than me. And things like that, you know, throw the pass where the receiver is supposed to be at the correct time and maybe make a good over-the-shoulder catch and run and get a touchdown and maybe keep the quarterback in the pocket for a change and not get him killed. But, you know, that's just me talking. And especially with having nosebleed seats, I get to see it all. And I think we're probably even going to see a little bit of that on the first game. Even if they're kind of bad, and I get that, let's see if these players know where they're supposed to be and if they can execute. Execution is going to be the key. Guys, those are kind of my thoughts. And have a great day.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, buddy. And for anybody who doesn't know, he's a watchmaker. So clock repairman. So
correct.
He knows time.
If you have a cuckoo that needs fixing, he's there for
it. Yeah. You know, and I think, I hate to admit it, and Bob is hearing me right now. I think years ago I had one in my possession from the family, and I don't know what happened to it.
Was it an heirloom? Was it work?
Yeah, well, it probably was, more than I want to admit, because I just told you I lost track of it. It's probably gone.
How do you
now.
Lose track of a clock that size?
I don't. Well, it wasn't that. No, it wasn't a grandfather clock. It was a cuckoo clock.
Yeah, like a mantle. Okay.
Yeah. One you hang on the wall, but it was in the family forever, and it just occurred to me not too long ago that it's like, whatever happened to that? I hate to admit that. But it was broken, and it was probably tossed.
A broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and you're right. What Bob had said, that I think if we all temper our expectations and we see these, maybe the first game isn't going to be pretty, but I think we will see slow incremental improvements. I think we will see a lot of things we did not see under the Pace and Nagy project, which is all I can ask for personally. 312-332-3776. You know what? Cautiously optimistic. We're going to hit break here, come back, and we'll take your calls about the Bears. We'll get back to talking White Sox. We've got some audio to play for the Cubs. We'll talk trade deadline Tuesday at 5 p.m. Central. We haven't seen any movement on the south side or the north side. Maybe we'll have some breaking news during the show today. I don't know, but we'll talk about all of that, and we want you to jump in. 312-332-3776 here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Watch us on Twitch today, every day, all day. Twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Brought to you by the Jim Irsay Collection. Complete with new camera angles. So now you can see my nose hair.
Oh, I'm cheating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look good enough. Don't do that, though. I wouldn't recommend it. So the MLB trade deadline.
Don't you have to get Sylvie's man groomer thing? Yeah.
Where he's had that on his body, I want no part of that.
No, I'm not his personally, the one that he
right.
Recommends.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was going to say, he leaves it on the counter here for everybody to use, a community groomer? No, thank you.
No, there's usually a half bottle of whiskey there or something.
Well, there still is.
Yeah.
There still is. I've been threatening to take this home, and every time I see it, it's Brother's Bun. Every time I see it, there's a little more missing. So I'm not sure. This is in a studio, so I'm not sure who's sipping during a show.
Not
Yerk? Carmen?
I don't know.
I'm going to say Yerk.
You think it's Yerk? Yeah, maybe. 312-332-3776. MLB trade deadline Tuesday, 5 p.m. Central. We're not expecting anything big on the south side, are we? I know I'm not. Nothing earth-shattering.
Well, do you need...
Do we need something? Look, we need a dynamic move to change the vibe or something. I mean, it's not coming from the top down. You know, Tony's emotionless. He's enabling people. He's explaining things away. I've seen enough of this.
Well, and we have a Twitter poll question out there. What do the White Sox need most?
Any idea of what is trendy? I've looked at it already.
Yeah.
Take a guess.
Because the new manager was Moniel, just because I'm a meathead, and that's been the storyline.
Just take a guess, Brian.
I know. It's not even close. So a lefty power bat, okay, maybe. Bullpen help. Yeah. Fire Tony, yes, like yesterday. Wow. Running away with that one.
It is. It is. And arguably, we need to do all three things.
Yes. Well, and here's the thing, because Daryl Van Schouwen at the Sun-Times, I've been trying to get you interested in David Robertson, former White Sox pitcher, who's available.
Hey, I'll take him. I just don't want to trade away any big deal. I don't want to trade away a name that I know.
137 batting average versus lefties. He's got a 1.83 ERA his last 35 appearances, or his 35 appearances. He's the slugging is 2.19. I mean, the numbers look good. He's cheap in terms of money, what's left on
his
contract.
And that would be a return stint on the south side for him.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. There's a comfort level there.
Yep.
There's an experience level there. Michael Givens is also an arm. Here's a guy who was just a guy with the Cubs in the bullpen to start the season. And all of a sudden, the last 16 outings, he's let up zero earned runs, 20 strikeouts in 17 and a third innings pitched. And there are going to be a lot of people calling Jed Hoyer about him.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any untouchables on the north side.
No. And our
Suzuki?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Beyond that, no.
Well, and the other Twitter poll question is, will Marcus Stroman be a Cub after 5 o'clock Tuesday? Will he be traded? Yes or no? And when Jesse threw that out there about a month ago, one of our conversations with Jesse, the great Jesse Rogers, I was like, wait, what? I know he can opt out after 2 years of his contract. And now that he's back off the injured list, he's pitching like the guy they signed and expected. And nothing's off the table, like you said.
No.
I've voted that he will not be a Cub after Tuesday.
I don't think he will either. There's too many people that need starting pitching. The
absolutely.
Cubs are actually sitting in a decent spot right now.
Yep.
They can entertain offers on anybody, and the longer they wait, the more they're going to get, and we'll see how Jed can manage these trades and these assets he would be returning. Because, again, it's a rebuild. I don't care what he wants to call it. It's a full-out rebuild.
And it's interesting because Gordon Whitmire, NBC Sports Chicago, wrote a column saying, how about the Cubs go and get Carlos Rodon after he opts out of the contract with San Francisco this season?
Oh, that would hurt my heart.
And then you don't trade Stroman. You envision Rodon, Stroman, and Keegan Thompson, and Justin Steele, and you know, Kyle Hendricks, whatever he's still got left for it. All of a sudden, how much closer are you to being a team that can contend in the division? So you can pick a lane if you're Jed Hoyer. You can have a bigger picture plan where you're going to add a guy like Carlos Rodon and pay what he's making, $20 million with the Giants per year on a two-year contract, and he can opt out after this season. So you're going to have to give him 4 years at, you know, $80 million, $85 million, whatever it is. It'll be interesting because you'll know by Tuesday which road is he going, still going down the road of tearing this thing down, or if Stroman's still around, you know, all of a sudden you start thinking what they might do in the offseason.
312-332-3776, a challenge for ESPN listeners. Within reason, now don't call and say Juan Soto, because that's just not going to happen, but within reason, what's the one move the Cubs should make or the Sox should make? If Rick Hahn or Jed Hoyer calls you today and say, hey, you get one move to make, what would that move be? Again, within reason. Pie in the sky stuff ain't going to work. Like the Juan Soto thing for either team, that's pie in the sky. It's not going to work. It'll be interesting where he ends up. Could be the Mariners.
And boy, if that
would turn that team into instant uh-oh, especially for the Astros.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, we talk about Juan Soto to the Yankees because Aaron Judge doesn't look like he's got the same numbers that
but they
wants.
Got their guy. Were you surprised at and how about that? What about a class that guy. He won't get vaccinated to make the trip for his Kansas City team when they went up to Toronto.
Right.
But the Yankees call him and said, oh, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, because we might have to go up there for the playoffs. So Andrew being attendee's convictions are all based on whether it's a winning team or not. But they were supposedly the runners up to Luis Castillo with the Reds. You know, the Reds traded him to Mariners, as we mentioned, for those prospects. And, of course, the Yankees are in every conversation, right? And why can't my team, the Cubs, get back to being that team where you expect to win every year and you don't take no for an answer and you're in every conversation for whatever big-time player is available?
And I can say the same for the South Side, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And although this year was supposed to be some sort of year, other than it has turned out to be? 312-332-3776. The frustration is palatable on the South Side. When we come back in 2 minutes, we'll talk about Lance Lynn, the pitcher we thought bounced back until he didn't. We'll take your calls, too. 312-332-3776. It's Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000.